Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 2, 2017. Hundreds of stolen cattle are recovered in Kajokeji County.
We made a complaint, of course, that our cows were looted, and we don't know why they were looted. So let the authorities or the community, particularly Borg, let them try to talk to these youth so that these cows are recovered.
And more than 10 butchers are arrested in Torit.
Yesterday, they arrested me and put me in a cell. And behind me, my meat was sold at 200 SSP.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in the counties of Ngepo and Lowole say they have recovered at least 260 head of cattle over the weekend. The youth are suspected of stealing the cattle from Jonglei State last month. The youth have been living in Kajokeji for the last 4 years. Officials say they are trying to recover another 1,700 cattle from the raiders. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Ngepo County Commissioner Julius Lokonga says there has been no history of cattle raiding in Greater Kajokeji, so he is disappointed that armed youth from Bor stole more than 2,000 head of cattle from Lori, Gederu, Kaya, Lora, and other surrounding villages.
Over the years, there were some people from Jongole who have been grazing along the northern parts of Kajokeji. So they have been here for over 5 years, but they have never done something like that, I don't know.
No one has been arrested in connection with the raid. Lokonga says authorities are involving community leaders to resolve the matter peacefully. He says community leaders from Bor and Kajokeji are working together to recover the stolen cattle.
It is the community of Jongole and the community of people of Greater Kajokeji trying to solve this issue in a peaceful manner. We made a complaint, of course, that our cows were looted, and we don't know why they were looted. So let the authorities or the community, particularly Bor, let them try to talk to these youth so that these cows are recovered.
Lokonga says none of the youth accused of stealing the cattle will be punished if they return the cattle peacefully. Liwolo County Commissioner Victor Ware says cattle keepers from Bor who have settled in Kajokeji should return to their homes in Jonglei State to avoid misunderstanding with the people of Greater Kajokeji. But Ware also says the national government should take punitive measures against the youth involved in cattle raiding if it continues.
It is better for the central government exactly to remove this group of people away from the location so as to make the area in common.
Last month, an identified gunman abducted Kangapo County Commissioner Julius Tabule. His whereabouts remain unknown. Authorities in Greater Kajokeji say, aside from that incident and the recent cattle raiding, the area remains largely peaceful. In 2014, President Salva Kiir issued a decree ordering cattle keepers from Jonglei State to return home after farmers in the Equatorial region complained that cattle keepers were occupying their farmland and their animals were destroying crops. Despite the president's decree, most of the cattle keepers have remained in the area. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
From Kajokeji, we move to Imatong State, where municipal authorities in Torit have arrested more than 10 butchers and shut down their meat shops after meat sellers increased the price of a kilogram of beef from 200 to 300 South Sudanese pounds. A few meat shops remain open today, but the owners complain they won't make a profit by selling a kilogram of meat at 200 South Sudanese pounds as demanded by state authorities. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Torit.
A butcherman in Torit's old market sharpens his knife as he prepares to cut a piece of beef for a customer. Dozens of customers queued up to buy beef for their families as meat shops opened in Torit this morning. About a dozen meat dealers were arrested yesterday by local police on orders from Torit Town Mayor Eddie William Ponciano, but were later released on condition that they lower their meat price from 300 to 240 South Sudanese pounds per kilogram. Butchermen in Torit say the municipal authority's decision to force them to lower their meat prices is causing them to lose money. Ismail Suleiman is one of the butchers who was arrested. Speaking in Arabic, Suleiman says he has lost interest in selling meat with a mandated prices of 200 South Sudanese pounds per kilogram.
Yesterday, they arrested me and put me in a cell. And behind me, my meat was sold at 200 SSP per kilogram, lower than the cost, and I lost 7,500 SSP.
Papa Paul is the head of Butchermen in Torit. He's speaking in Arabic. Paul says although he does not oppose fixed meat prices in general, he believes cattle dealers should also be forced to reduce the price per head of cattle.
What has made us increase the price is because a cow at the moment is 36,000 SSP, about $400, which is expensive. If they reduce, then also the meat will reduce. Considering this, the butchers decided to sell at 300 SSP per kilogram. And now the government has come in that we sell at 240. So for us now, those who can manage this will continue, and those who cannot should leave the business.
Gabriel Agany sells livestock. Speaking in Arabic, Agany says cattle dealers' prices are high right now to stay in line with the skyrocketing prices for food commodities in the market.
We are getting these cows from kraals. Each cow at 26,000 SSP. And transporting each cow, we pay 2,000. And when we reach Torit, we would have added all this on a cow. And when the butchers buy from us, they will increase the meat price and the government will start complaining. But that is the reality. Things are bad.
Women buying meat at Torit's old market this morning applauded the local government's decision to lower meat prices. Anna Rakadio bought half a kilogram of meat this morning for her children. Rakadio says meat prices should be lowered even more.
Let them put a kilo of maybe 200. Maybe 250, I think, a kilo. The other nose kilo, maybe 125.
For the past 3 days, restaurant dealers complained they haven't made a decent profit. Torit Market restaurant owner Rosa Kenyi is one of them. Working during these days is not getting us anything, Kenyi says. She says all the money goes for meat, but for them to get charcoal or onions will not be able to do that. Rosa says she then decided to increase a plate of food to 60 South Sudanese pounds instead of 50 so that she can get something. But still, Rosa said nothing good has happened. As she continues operating, Torit Town Mayor Eddie William Ponciano says the decision to arrest the butchers and force them to sell meat at a lower price was to make prices affordable again to the poor.
I came to the market and I proved that it is true. 1 kilo of cow meat is 300, and 1 kilo of goat or sheep meat is 350. So that means meat has been taken out from poor people. Secondly, I found that people who are selling water are also selling water very expensive. 1 drum of water is 50 pounds, including the donkey, which is not using fuel. And even these bicycles, they're selling 1 jerrycan is 10 pounds. So I went there and I arrested the butchers who were selling meat with 300.
William says the butchers were fined 700 South Sudanese pounds each for increasing their meat prices when they were released. Last year, the Torit Town Mayor Ponciano arrested bar sellers who allowed people to drink beer during working hours. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
South Sudanese and Sudanese refugees in the Ugandan capital Kampala say they are learning new cultures. The refugees say despite the several challenges they face, learning to live with people from different cultures helps them to adapt to their new environment. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has the story for VOA from Kigali, Rwanda.
Sadiq Umarizba, called Juba City in the Arua Park section of downtown Kampala, usually filled capacity with people from all over East Africa, including Sudanese, South Sudanese, Ugandans and Congolese. Umar, a Sudanese from Darfur region, did business in South Sudan up until violence broke out in late 2013, which led more than 1 million people fleeing their homes during the three-year-long conflict. Speaking in Arabic, 32-year-old businessman says adapting South Sudan culture was never a problem. He says living in South Sudan did not give him any difficulties. Umar says they have a common culture and speak the same language. So living in South Sudan was not challenging because they were the same people before separation, including the food they ate. But when violence broke out in Juba in December 2013, Umar says people looted his grocery shop in Juba's Konyokonyo market, forcing him to flee to Kampala. With the help of a Ugandan friend, Umar spent time trying to figure out which kind of business he could run in Kampala. Using most of his savings, Umar opened the Juba City Bar in March 2014. Like other Sudanese and South Sudanese living in the Ugandan capital, Umar says it was a bit challenging adapting a new culture and learning a new language. More than 2 years after he set up his bar and restaurant, Umar says he still uses sign language or speaks through a translator when addressing Ugandans or people from other countries. But overall, he says life in Uganda is good. Umar says Ugandans are very welcoming and peaceful. He says they also respect foreigners, so staying with them has not been a problem. Gabriel Kir, who is studying for a master's degree at Uganda's Makerere University, says he too finds it easy to live in Uganda. Kir says Ugandans are very sociable and accommodating.
Emerging from conflict in South Sudan decades back, they realized that what they need most is harmonious coexistence. Because if you live in harmony, your business thrives and you get to get along with the people, because the same people you are staying with could be your customers, they could be your neighbors, they could help assist you in one way or the other. Probably they value that.
Peter Gatwork, an urban refugee living in Kampala's Kansanga suburb, says he enjoys Ugandan culture. But he complains that despite the hospitable nature of Ugandans, he is sometimes harassed by police officers who arrest him and demand bribes.
I've been arrested by police without reason. And when they arrest me, they ask me, man, you support your dogman. I tell, how can I support the government? I didn't do anything. But I just moving around, I'm going to home. They catch me. Come on here, Sudanese. By the way, they are disturbed. They mean they want money, by the way. They want money. And I don't have money.
Gatwork says he was eventually released without charges last November. Hundreds of South Sudanese live peacefully in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, as students, refugees, and businessmen and women. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at mental health.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what does it mean to be a gentleman in your culture?
In our culture, to be a gentleman, it means that this is the stage whereby you are initiated into a group, age group in our culture, whereby you are growing from your childhood to the adulthood. Therefore, you can be recognized in your community or culture.
It means that you have to treat ladies with a lot of care and make sure that you don't behave aggressively.
It means someone who is well-behaved, speak politely, and is very hard-working.
A gentleman is someone who cares for anybody that comes around, speak to the person politely.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. And today we are talking about mental health. Doctors say mental health is a hidden crisis in much of Africa, but paramedics in Zimbabwe have been offering private therapy sessions on the grounds of clinics in Harare. A trial conducted by the University of Zimbabwe, along with the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and King's College London, shows that therapy has led to big improvement in mental health. As Henry Ridgewell reports, the treatment could serve as a blueprint for tackling mental health problems in Africa.
Doctors estimate one in four Zimbabweans suffers depression or anxiety, but there are just 12 psychiatrists treating the entire population of 14 million, says Dr. Victoria Sims of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
We can't possibly go the route of training psychiatrists and psychologists because it would take 15 years. How are we going to provide treatment?
Local doctors have come up with a simple but seemingly highly effective answer. Wooden seats, so-called friendship benches, were installed on the grounds of several Harare health clinics. Visitors were offered six one-on-one counselling sessions with lay health workers, known as grandmother health providers. Again, Dr. Victoria Sims.
The very lowest cadre of the health system, to train those women to offer problem-solving therapy. And so the patient explains what all their problems are, and it's opening up the mind in the sense of allowing the patient to see that they can do something about their problems.
The study involved more than 550 patients. After 6 months, only 14% of the patients in the friendship bench group reported symptoms of depression, compared to 50% in a control group. They were also five times less likely to have suicidal thoughts. The co-founder of the Friendship Bench program, Dr. Dixon Chibanda of the University of Zimbabwe, told VOA via Skype the intervention had a wide range of benefits.
Not only a mental health sort of package, but a package that actually improved outcomes of things like hypertension, diabetes, and adherence to medication for people living with HIV.
That success has led to friendship benches being rolled out to 60 clinics in Harare and two other cities. The Canadian government is helping to fund the expansion through its Grand Challenges Canada aid program, making it one of the biggest programs in sub-Saharan Africa. Researchers say it could be a blueprint for mental health in low-income regions and could even offer lessons for treatment in richer countries. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Parents and teachers in neighboring Kenya are in shock after Education Minister released results of 2016 university entrance exams. Just 15% of the more than half a million candidates qualified. The disappointment results represent a significant drop from last year after officials cracked down on cheating in the exams. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The number of students who attained an A grade in the 2016 exams dropped by 95% compared to the previous year. In 2015, in a single school with 202 students, all the candidates scored grade A, but the next year only 141 students across the country got a similar mark. The overall poor performance follows new strict rules designed to cap cheating. The 2016 exam results were released 2 months earlier than expected. Kenyan media reports say examination officials released the results early after some school principals pressured them to award their students high marks. Some principals are accused of bribing examiners between $100 to $160 to give their students good grades. John Mugo is director of data at Twaweza East Africa, a non-profit working to improve education and government responsiveness in the region. He says education officials will face a lot of tough questions.
Questions are being raised on whether those heads of the management should be brought to account to the public what happened. If they were being involved in massive irregularities, then I think we should not just keep quiet. They should be made to account. But then the other question that Kenyans have is quality. Are those students really learning, or have we been drilling them to just pass the test such that when the test changes slightly, then they all fail?
Education expert Tom Kinbaraza says credibility has been restored to the education sector. But another challenge awaits.
But now we look at now the many students who are affected. Where are we going to have them? The ministry should come up with a way to ensure that at least the majority of the students at least go somewhere, not whereby education is only meant for few students who pass.
Kenya National Examinations Council Chairman Professor George Magoha argues students do not need to get good grades to be successful. Baraza echoes that view.
They always are equalized, passing exams with an excellence. If somebody fails, let's say somebody gets a B plus, a D plus, or an E, he's seen as a failure. They don't emphasize that in most cases on talent, where somebody is talented. So you see, like most of those candidates who scored low grades are very much demoralized, and maybe they think that their future, their luminous future, has been twisted.
Nevertheless, the Ministry of Education said it will look at where the problem lies after the shocking exam results. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move to Cameroon, where many African youngsters dream of becoming wealthy football stars. But the first ever global employment report by the World Players Union may serve as a reality check. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Fans of the Aigle Football Club of Menua, a team in Cameroon's second division, cheered their players during a training session. Among the strikers is 31-year-old Emmanuel Koska. Koska recently returned from Thailand. He sold his father's land to pay for the trip, but says that once he arrived, his agent disappeared and the team he went to play for did not retain him. Now back home, Koska struggles to earn enough to meet his needs and those of his family.
Playing at the local level here in Cameroon, there is nothing much. Normally on Monday, after a day of play, players can earn like 750 francs per training session. And it's not every day.
It is a common story, says Cameroon football analyst Kizito Elundu.
Les Camerounais vont là-bas et ils sont en retard parce que ces pays-là ont les leurs.
He says Cameroonian players who seek greener pastures abroad have a lot of challenges competing with players who have a known track record. He says overseas teams consider the players they know first. And he says many of the Cameroonian players wind up working as night watchmen or doing odd jobs for little pay. He says when they return home, their performance on the field has suffered, the coaches lose interest. The International Federation of Professional Footballers has released some sobering statistics in its first ever global employment analysis. The findings highlight precarious working conditions and contract violations like delayed pay that can make players vulnerable to injury and match fixing. Salaries are also lower than the public may think, according to FIFPro. Nearly three quarters of players in Africa earn less than $1,000 per month, according to the report. Joseph Embola is a 24-year-old player for Tonnerre Kalara, a Division 1 club.
When we play football, we are not thinking about the money. We're thinking more about the future. Because if we think about money, it's really going to discourage us. Can you imagine we go for 9 months without being paid? Owe us arrears for 9 months. That's very discouraging. The only hope is that we believe in the future and we know that one day we're going to come out of that.
First Division coach Casimir Marquez says just a handful of Cameroon's 100 professional teams actually pay their players. The rest have to rely on their families and handouts from fans.
Oui, mais les conséquences sont énormes. C'est que notre football se vide de ses meilleurs enfants. C'est-à-dire qu'à peine un enfant
He says the consequence is that Cameroonian football is being deprived of youth who should have made it interesting, competitive, and lively. He says once a young man shows signs of becoming a good player, he is recruited abroad with promises that his needs and the needs of his family will be met. He says players prefer to go on the adventure. In a bid to retain more talent, the Cameroon Football Association is looking for company sponsorship so that it can add to the 5 million CFA francs, about $9,000, that it gives to clubs each year. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John, and nice to have you back.
Thank you.
Authorities in Greater Kejukeji counties of Niopa and Liwolo say over the weekend they recovered at least 260 head of cattle. They allegedly were raided by armed youth from Jonglei State last month. The youth have been living in Kejukeji for the last 4 years. Officials say they're trying to recover another 1,700 stolen cattle. Niepo County Commissioner Julius Lokonga says there's been no history of cattle raiding in Greater Kejukeji, so he's disappointed that youth from Bor stole more than 200 head of cattle from surrounding villages. No one has been arrested in connection with the raiding. Lokonga says authorities are asking community leaders to resolve the matter peacefully. He says community leaders from Bor and Kejukeji are working together to recover the stolen cattle. Municipal authorities in the Imatong State capital, Tort, have arrested more than 10 butchers and shut down their meat shops after meat sellers increased the price of a kilogram of beef from 200 to 300 South Sudanese pounds. A few meat shops remain open today, but their owners complain that they won't be making a profit by selling a kilogram of meat for just 200 South Sudanese pounds, as demanded by the government. About a dozen meat sellers were arrested yesterday by local police on orders from Tort Town Mayor Eddie William Ponziano. And finally, South Sudanese and Sudanese refugees in the Ugandan capital Kampala say they're learning new cultures. They say despite the enormous challenges they face, learning to live with people of different cultures helps them adapt to their new environment. Sadiq Umar's bar called Juba City in the Arua Park section of downtown Kampala is usually filled to capacity with people from all over East Africa, including South Sudan. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Sitialosi by Eddie Kenzo. We've been listening to Eddie Kenzo with the song Sitelosi. I'm John Tanza in Washington. It's good to be back in Studio 17. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.